This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
A day after the State of the Union address, the president blaming the classified documents on poorly packed up offices. Boy, you think? In the meantime, the Chinese spy balloon really now is front and center on a lot of people's minds about what a fiasco it is for the U.S. And then Tyre Nichols, sad to say, who was beaten by a handful of Memphis police who have been fired and many of them now charged. There is a photograph of him bloodied and beaten that was sent out to a handful of people, including a woman that this officer had just met, of the conquest where he's standing over his body and he's handcuffed, and he decided he'd take a few pictures and send them out. Oof, that was a mistake. Hey, everybody, Kate Delaney. And in between, there are things to smile about in this country, believe it or not. So welcome to this version of America Tonight, including the fact that if you're a fan of the Super Bowl, whoo, Super Bowl is coming up. We're going to hit the man cave this hour. And, in fact, talk about some of the exotic wagering that happens with the Super Bowl. And, more important, who's going to win? I don't know if it is kind of a foreshadowing thing or not, but I was walking today, and I had the pleasure of walking on a beach. I was walking on a beach today, and I saw five different people with Philadelphia Eagles t-shirts on. I have a lot of friends in Kansas City, a lot of very good friends and people that have been very good to me in my life who are cheering their heart out for Pat Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't know. You may be one of them. All right, let's just dive right into it and talk about some of what is being talked about. Maybe in your neck of the woods. I always say that that's what it's about. What are the whispers? And people are talking about the Chinese spy balloon. And part of the reason why is because the revelations that there were other balloons that were sent over the U.S. And in fact, this is something that China has done in apparently other countries. So it's become now much bigger than even, this giant balloon where we have our Navy out there that gathered all the remnants that were left from the balloon that we shot down over the weekend off the shores of Myrtle Beach, and we're looking at how much there was, and then realizing that these Chinese balloons have covered the U.S. before, in at least four different times, and not just there, but other countries. And there is now a Chinese balloon, of course, hovering over Taiwan. Our Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, was supposed to go to China and, among other things, talk about their situation with Hong Kong and Taiwan and other areas where there is tension between the U.S. and China. And so China refused conversation with the U.S. Defense Secretary following this suspected spy balloon. So that was the other thing that came out of that. So our Secretary of State, Blinken, postpones his trip to Beijing as a result of this because of what happened last weekend. And the U.S. Defense Secretary, Lloyd Austin, following the downing of that suspected Chinese balloon, China said, no, we're not going to talk to you. We're not doing it. Because the Defense Department submitted a request for a call between Austin and China's Minister of National Defense immediately after the fighter jets shot down the balloon on Saturday afternoon, trying to keep the lines of communication open and be responsible. But that didn't happen. China is saying Look, this was a weather balloon that was thrown off course. That's it. They did say this, because you never hear this, but they did say they regret that that happened, but that it was a weather balloon. A weather balloon that had some serious hardware on it. We're measuring the weather with some of the biggest hardware we've ever put on any balloons. So you look at the high stakes meeting with President Xi and Biden in November, and how the emphasis was on, let's keep the lines of communication open. Well, the lines of communication are definitely not open. I mean, in our airspace, the presence of this balloon, it is a clear violation of our sovereignty and international law. It's obviously unacceptable that this has happened. So where do you go from there? I mean, what do you do? And it was part of the State of the Union. Of course, there was a mention of it, that we will not tolerate that. But these are words. And what ultimately does that lead to? And will we, in fact, somehow maintain diplomatic relations with China? All you have to do is look, whatever your search engine is, just take a look at the Navy photos, because the Navy released the photos of the Chinese spy balloon recovery and how much it was, right? And how much they gathered. And get a sense of that and tell me if you really, honestly, just with a untrained eye for this stuff, do you really buy that this is a weather balloon? I'm going to say no, right? I'm going to say there's no way you're buying that. Very sad as we watch, but so many Americans taking part in any way they can, whether it's just through a couple of dollars or it's efforts to still help in the what may be recovery of bodies at this point, because over 15,000 dead in Turkey and Syria, that area where they were slammed with the earthquake and those aftershocks. Rescuers racing to do what they could, and still 70 plus hours later found a baby that was born underneath all the debris. The mother died, but the baby was alive, and they were able to recover the baby, and the baby is stable. And there were some children that were found. Sadly, there were more people that were found dead than alive, but 7.8 magnitude quake in that area that was so dense with the kind of buildings that they had, it's not a surprise that would mostly be what would happen there. I mean, survivors are scrambling for food and shelter, and it's freezing, the temperatures, and they were watching in so many of the areas to see if, please, please, under the debris, somebody from my family is going to be pulled alive and not dead. And I mean, there were some really hard hit areas, but the fact that there were survivors that were being pulled, they have the dogs out there, they were quiet and listening in spots, they were able to rescue some people. That is the hope, that you're going to find more people alive, you're going to get lucky. And there definitely was some of that. So that's the good news, the silver lining. And of course, that so many people are reaching out to try to help in any way they can. Coming up, it is the Super Bowl. There is so much focus there. And, of course, on LeBron James and his great feat. We'll talk about that as well when we go to the Man Cave.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
Do you ever get the feeling that the world is being held together with duct tape? Every day we're thrown some new meaningless drama in the fake news to distract us from the reality we're all about to face. Between the government trying to print their way out of debt, military conflicts, the disintegration of our most trusted institutions, and a looming food shortage, preparedness is no longer a choice. It's a necessity. You can trust My Patriot Supply. Our emergency food kits come packed with tasty meals, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one kit for each person in your family. Self-reliance is the only alternative to government food lines. Time is running out. Become ungovernable. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and save on dozens of different emergency food kits while you can. These kits are in stock, ship fast, and arrive in unmarked boxes for your privacy. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com before the next crisis strikes. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hey guys, why settle for poor quality Powdy Arco that's sold by stores and online resellers when you can get Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Powdy Arco Super Tea at drinksupertea.com or 818-965-9113. The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Powdy Arco Super Tea is only available at drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com.
Ever feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Heal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.
We are in the man cave, and so much of the conversation is about the Super Bowl, the commercials, the game itself. Will it be exciting? Will it in fact be as close as the line is, which is Philadelphia is favored by a point and a half, or will we be snacking and paying more attention to what the snacks are than anything else because we're bored by the game? I will be paying attention to the game. I don't know about the rest of you, but it is a big deal because, you know, 100 million people watch the Super Bowl. People connected to the game know this is a very, very big moment. It's a big moment for athletes who have, you know, put it all out there to get to this spot. And now, after a very, very long season, here you go. It's all about the pageantry. I call it the pageantry of what surrounds the game too. So some of the interesting bets, I'm just going to say this because I think it's fun for some people. They'll bet on this kind of stuff. Field goals, like who scores the first field goal, and how many Super Bowls have field goals opened up the scoring? And the Chiefs' two Super Bowl appearances in the past three seasons have opened with field goals. So then you think about that. So that's a bet that's out there that some people just have a little fun with and put a couple of dollars down on that. And then how many touchdowns, you know, in the first half? So what's the number? One and a half touchdowns. Will the Eagles score one and a half touchdowns or not? Philly has seven first-half touchdowns through two games in the playoffs. Will they find the end zone at least twice in the first half or not? And then you look at some of the goofy things. to win the third quarter? Will the Chiefs win the third quarter outright? That's something you could bet on. Will that happen or not? Because it's the quarter, if you statistically look at it, where Pat Mahomes, the quarterback for Kansas City, is the most proficient. And I like this one. I mean, and there's pages and pages of this nonsense of prop bets that you can pick really obscure ones. So MGM, BetMGM, has a prop on the length of the game's first touchdown with a line of 6.5 yards. So if you look at Pro Football Reference, you can, and I saw this on either Yahoo or USA Today, somewhere I found it in my research, we'll find that 64 of the 120 touchdowns scored by the Chiefs and the Eagles were 6 yards or less. So 6 yards or less. So would you take that for the under? I would bet the under. That's what I would say. I would take like the Eagles and the under if I was going to take that bet based on what I just told you there. Anyway, it's interesting, some of the long odds, the interesting odds, and the crazy prop bets. You know, is the coin toss going to be heads or is it going to be tails and whatnot? And it kicks at 6:30. 6:30 is when the Super Bowl goes off Eastern, so then you look at where you are and look at the time for that. And I think a lot of people are going to be tuning in, especially if it's close. They'll be doing that. All right, I got to jump to basketball. I'm going to kind of pop around on what I think. If we were all hanging out in the Whoa Man Cave, we'd be talking about the Lakers traded Russell Westbrook in a three-team deal with the Jazz and the T-Wolves. So how about that? And they get D'Angelo Russell from Minnesota in that deal. That also includes Utah sending Mike Conley to the Timberwolves. So the Lakers get Malik Beasley and Jared Vanderbilt from Utah. Minnesota gets a couple of gets Alexander Walker and picks, and the Jazz also end up with a first-round pick from the Lakers, and they get Juan Toscano-Anderson in that deal. Westbrook may seek a buyout from the Jazz so he can join a potential contender. That's a possibility. You know, it's weird. The Westbrook thing never really worked out with the Lakers. They were hoping that it would. I mean, they picked him up in 2021 in the summer. He just wasn't a good fit with the King, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis. So, you know, they missed the playoffs last season. They lost their coach. Vogel was dismissed after that. And the Lakers are in 13th place right now in the Western Conference. So they had to make some sort of a move, it seems, and that's the move that they decided they were going to make. And the timing is interesting, too, because you look at where they are, so they had to make some kind of a move if they were going to make a move. And you just have the history made with LeBron James, who's now the all-time scorer in NBA history. I saw a great little clip of him being interviewed by Michael Strahan, and Strahan asked him just an obvious question about, was this on your list? Was this on a list of something that you wanted to break and become the leading all-time scorer? And he said, you know, never. It wasn't what I was thinking about. It was never something that I thought about, and it blows my mind. Of course it does, because it's an incredible amount of points, number one, and the fact is that he's still playing, so who knows what the bar is ultimately set at. And then you start to think, because this is what we do, right? Who is the greatest of all time, and where would you rank LeBron James when he's the all-time, you know, scoring record? He breaks Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's 38,387 points, and he did it the other day against the Oklahoma City Thunder at home. So, you know, there is some perspective as different eras, that kind of thing, but you just gotta think that, and Abdul-Jabbar, they are not really, and James are not really close, But, you know, even Jabbar's been asked about his relationship with James, and he said no relationship. I mean, they have no relationship. But they obviously have a mutual respect and appreciation, and Abdul-Jabbar was courtside. He gave James the game ball after he broke the record, and they embraced for whatever differences they've had, and Abdul-Jabbar was pretty gracious after the game. And, you know, one of the things that LeBron James has done, and it is something he really gets involved with, is helping kids in schools and where he grew up and in other areas. And he's done a lot, and he should, because of who he is and obviously the resources he has. But he's done a lot to help a lot of people, and not always seeking necessarily the spotlight for doing that. It becomes known, but that's not what he's necessarily trying to do. So good on him. I saw an interesting story when you think about college football and how big college football is and recruiting, and it's about recruiting, getting the best players. I saw something about Georgia. They, of course, were national champs again. Georgia's yearly college football recruiting spending, $4.5 million. It's one-third more than any other school, the Bulldogs. Because that comes out, you know, in the financial report from the athletic department. And no other program at any Power 5 public school has come that close to that number so far. So, for example, you look at Texas A&M, they're number two. They've spent $2.98 million. Tennessee is three, $2.92 million. Texas, when you think of their program, $2.44 million. Alabama, the Crimson Tide, the great Crimson Tide, $2.32 million. Wow, $4.5 million to get the best of the best and go and see and go and recruit. I mean, because what counts as recruiting? It's lodging, meals for recruits and for the school personnel and unofficial visits and all of that. And it's covered from, you know, and these particular reports from July 2021 to June of 2022. So that's how much, you know, phone charges, postage, planes, all of the things that are used in what you would do to recruit. That is an incredibly high number, I have to say. All right, two great authors waiting in the wings. You don't want to miss their stories. That's coming up next. What keeps you going?
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Hi, I'm your host, Smokey Colbert, filling in for Smokey, because after 75 years of...
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Turns out there's much more to say. Nearly 90% of wildfires are caused by us humans being careless, dumping our used barbecue coals willy-nilly. Guess the song was wrong. We did start the fire. That's why I respect Mother Nature and her trees, whether coniferous or new car scented. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA News Update. The man accused of attacking former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband during a home invasion is appearing in court. David DePapp faces several felony counts after prosecutors say he broke into the couple's San Francisco home and attacked Paul Pelosi with a hammer.
Police body cam footage shows DePap attacking the elderly man after being asked to drop his weapon. Pelosi had to undergo surgery to repair a skull fracture and injuries to his hands following the confrontation. Researchers at Harvard say living a healthy lifestyle can reduce the risk of what's known as long COVID. They followed over 30,000 female nurses for 18 months. The research found a healthy body weight and adequate sleep can help reduce the risk by half. Football is still in the future for DeMar Hamlin. That's according to Dr. Tom Mayer, who joined Sirius's XM's Heart to Heart on Wednesday and said, "I guarantee you that DeMar Hamlin will be playing professional football again." Julio Flores, USA News.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Have you heard the warning from the dead doctors don't lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in his free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call him toll free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Dr. Joel Wallach, the dead doctors don't lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.
Joins us here on America Tonight. His book is called Do Ask, Do Tell, A Gay Conservative Lashes Back, Individualism, Identity, Personal Rights, Responsibility, and Calm. So you think about it, his story, and we are happy to have him with us. So Bill, thanks for coming on.
Yes, I'm pleased to be here.
Tell me about the road to writing this book. Why did you write it? What was the motivation?
Okay, there's a basic dichotomy. I was thrown out of the College of William and Mary right after Thanksgiving in 1961. In my freshman year, after having won a chemistry scholarship and everything, when I was called, after being called in by the Dean of Men the day after Thanksgiving, we didn't actually have Thanksgiving break. While my parents were actually visiting friends in North Carolina, and I was quizzed about some things in the dorm, some medicines in the dorm, and then gradually the conversation turned toward personal relationships, and I admitted to him that I thought of myself as a latent homosexual. There had been some problems with a roommate and with rumors and so forth, and so he asked for my parents, where my parents were. And I actually gave them the name of the family they were staying with in Charlotte so that he could track it down with information, which he did. And you can imagine with my parents spending Thanksgiving weekend after having visited me over the long weekend, getting a call like that. You can imagine how traumatic that must have been, wondering all weekend what this was like. But they came back Tuesday and met with the dean, and I had to be taken out of school simply for having said that. Now, the reasons for that, of course, at the time were, you know, in a dormitory that was considered, you know, that was considered forced intimacy. So I was like, you know, that I was either a threat for being, you know, possibly sexually interested in other men in the dorm because I had admitted to being latent homosexual, or even thinking to, in today's world with the gender war, ideology wars and so forth, I'm sort of half saying I'm not a male. You know, you could interpret it that way. But anyway, you fast forward 30 years into the 1990s after, you know, I came back and went to college at home. My parents sort of got over it, but it was kind of traumatic, and there were other things, like I was hospitalized for 6 months at NIH in Bethesda, Maryland. That was interesting. But I went to college at George Washington University in Washington. I grew up in Arlington, Virginia, which is right across the river, so I could commute by bus and didn't have to live in the dorm. And then I went to graduate school in the spring of 1966 at the University of Kansas and got my master's in math. And I lived in the dorm there in Lawrence and on the campus of KU, and no issues this time. Things had changed a lot even in the 60s. This was even before Stonewall. And because of my reputation for having psychiatric treatment and so forth, I had actually volunteered to take the physical, the draft physical, two more times, going from 4F to 1Y to 1A, and I was actually drafted into the Army. I technically volunteered two weeks early, but to go in 2 weeks early to have a better chance to an MOS. And served 2 years, starting in 1968, had a very difficult time in basic training because I was behind physically other boys. I did have some physical issues. I wound up in special training, and that was an experience. But I was also interviewed for a direct commission, which I didn't get, but that was also interesting. It was a very strange time. I spent the summer in the Pentagon learning about force development and why we needed conventional forces to deter nuclear war with the Soviets and that kind of thing. And then because of my background, having had psychiatric treatment, in quotes, I wound up being shipped out of the Pentagon because I couldn't get a top-secret clearance, and spending the rest of my time at Fort Eustis, which is 10 miles from Williamsburg. It's kind of ironic. But then 30 years later, you fast forward 30 years later in the book, and even within less than a decade after AIDS was such a controversy, you know, I came out basically a second time, and that's a whole other narrative. Moved away from home again and lived in New York and then moved to Dallas. That's another narrative that is not covered in as much detail in the book. So we jump ahead to the 1990s when Bill Clinton, you know, won the election and wanted to lift the ban on gays in the military. And the reason that people were objecting was that people in the military don't go home at night like you and I do. They don't have the privacy that you and I do. So having people in the barracks that might be sexually interested in them, particularly men, was an affront to their privacy. That was one of the main arguments that Sam Nunn and Senator Sam Nunn and that Charles Moskos and others made all the time, and it was being made in front of Congress. So you wound up with a policy called Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Actually, Bill Clinton wanted to call it Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Don't Pursue. And that went on for 17 years before the policy was repealed at the end of 2010. But that's when I got involved. At the time, in the 1990s, after various job changes in information technology, I was a mainframe computer programmer all these years. I wound up working for a company, Uslico, that sold life insurance to military officers. And I decided to write this book because of the dichotomy between, you know, privacy in the dorm in 1961 and privacy in the barracks in 1993 or 1997 or something. And so because it was going to be something that was going to be very public, well, it so turns out that the company, Uslico, got bought by a company called Northwestern National Life, which would become ReliaStar. And so I arranged a transfer to Minneapolis and live in Minneapolis to avoid the possibility of a conflict of interest back in the mid-90s. That's another angle of the story. And then my father had passed away in the 80s. My mother was having health problems, had coronary bypass surgery. There was almost a chance that I would have to move back. That didn't happen. But there were all kinds of interesting complications that happened in the 1990s. They're kind of the story that follows on. So the narrative of my story is kind of the 60s, you know, the expulsion, but why winding up and serving in the military anyway, and then becoming involved in the Don't Ask, Don't Tell fight. And the things I talked about were a little bit offensive to the leadership of the gay community, the gay leadership at the time wanted to focus on being an oppressed group, like things are today. And I wanted to talk more about, no, there's a real issue. We still have people having to sign up for selective service. Trans people have to sign up according to the sex assigned at birth, and that's something a lot of people don't know. So you have to think about that a lot of things in society are things that you don't get to choose, even though we believe in liberalism and we believe in freedom. There are a lot of things we have to deal with that we don't get to choose. And war, the possibility of war, is one of them, you know. And so that was the way I argued everything in the books, which was kind of unconventional.
So it's that
axis between privacy in a college dorm, which is no longer thought of as an issue today, but it was in the early 60s.
Oh, yeah.
And privacy in the barracks. And that isn't thought of as big an issue as it was. We've gotten used to the idea that that's okay since lifting Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And now Biden has actually lifted most of Trump's bans on transgender people. But that was, the transgender issue was totally separate from Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That wasn't part of it.
Right.
In 2011.
Right, exactly. So let me stop because people will learn all these stories. It's great. You've given us that everything in a nutshell. We have a couple of minutes left. What do you hope people take away from Do Ask, Do Tell?
Yeah. What I want to focus on is individual responsibility. When there are social problems and social inequities, How should you behave personally? How should you behave to respond to challenges that are coming your way, even if you have been privileged? What you're seeing now, it demands, particularly from the left, a spot to see things in terms of oppressed groups and the idea that you have to, for example, join in anti-racism if you're going to be heard in public at all. The idea that you need to meet their demands and be part of any of an explicit anti-racist movement and so forth before you do anything else, that you owe a debt for your inheriting privilege from what happened in the past. You know, that is not something that we thought is an acceptable way to do things. The left is trying to do. I've always thought about personal responsibility. I actually think that the idea, you know, that some sort of idea of personalized social credit in an individual basis actually makes some sense. You could think of social credit as almost like a cryptocurrency. That could make sense in moral terms more than what's going on today, which is particularly the left trying to produce the idea that everybody is either an oppressor or the oppressed, and one in one tribe or the other, all the tribalism. To think about it and think about individual responsibility and the individual level. What do you need to do as an individual? That's really the message I want people to get away from it. It is sort of on the conservative side. I'd say libertarian to conservative side.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And your book goes deep on so many aspects of the things that happened with you, which are very, very intriguing. Bill Bushkin, Do Ask, Do Tell. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever great books are sold. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot for listening to me.
Do you have the
those well-meaning friends who tell you what you ought to be doing with your life? I'm Kate Delaney. I have them. Occasionally I listened and I found myself stuck in dead-end jobs, relationships, and a life I absolutely did not recognize. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, I promise you, once you finish it, you won't let people tell you what to do anymore. Learn how to make bold moves that change the course of your destiny. The book is filled with stories that will make you laugh out loud and lessons you can apply right away. If you go to my website, katedelaneyradio.com, I have a steal of a deal. Check this out. Just $29.99 for both of my hard copy books. Deal Your Own Destiny, which I just talked about, and my girlfriend's gratitude journal. Perfect gift for girlfriends, wives, or any woman in your life. Again, both books, just $29.99. Click on special offer at katedelaneyradio.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
The name of the book is Killing Time. Michael Joseph Mann is in our virtual green room. And I have to take a second because he's got such an interesting background. Imagine you're an attorney. You're in the legal profession. And you've done this and you've done that and you've built up your name. And now you are the go-to person for 20 different counties. Wow, that would be a very busy job. So I would imagine that writing a novel would be a great release. So, Michael, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
What has your, before we get into the book, what has your life been like on the legal side of things?
It's just been exciting and sort of maybe not that exciting to the normal person, but just from us, from my standpoint, it's pretty good. With there's 20 different counties have action in emergency communications, and I sort of got into that many years ago and picked up that, and I've got 20 counties that I've served now, and
well,
it keeps me busy.
Yeah, I just think of the 20 counties and knowing dealing with one county, how overwhelming that can be, how 20 would be, certainly. So in between all of that running around, you find time for Killing Time. What was it that motivated you to write the novel?
Well, you know, it's always a dream to have a written word express a thought you wanted to keep inside. But then when you just dare to write it down and share it with others, there's a deep satisfaction. As I began to write in my early years, it was a hand of a Sisters of Charity at the Catholic school that encouraged it. I was named the co-editor of the school's first newspaper. Of course, this gave me the opportunity to write the heroics of school teams and sports, but then it transgressed into high school where I became the sports editor. But then my senior year, my dreams fell about. The sports editor at the local paper, then the Chattanooga Times, had retired after 33 years of service. And the new editor was then named. And I would be at least 33 years before a new opportunity came about. So since my sports pursuit had ended, and a new wave came about, and that next wave was Vietnam. So I became a dog handler and served 18 months there. I made many friends. I kept a diary of each day's events. Many years later, after I was deep in my lawyer activities, I went back to the diary and wrote a book. It was based on a diary, but also expressed the thoughts so many of us had. It was called American Passage, the Class of 68. It was a self-published author, of course. And that's how I began to write The Killings Time. It took many years to complete, having to find time amidst my lawyer activity. And as I've noticed before, I'm still a lawyer working with 20 counties in the emergency communication field. So that's pretty much, the background of how I came about this.
And tell us about the book. It's, if you take us to the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, all the crazy chaos and anarchy there, and I know I've toured it. I went through this with this show, and there were dozens of things, dozens of what you call foul play situations that are reported corpses discovered in empty houses and buildings. Tell us more about the story and your main character, Irish Henry.
Well, he's the kind of a guy that came out of the troubles of Ireland, and he was a young man there. He got in trouble there, and he was routed out there from it to the United States, which over to through Boston. He got into the military service where he could then serve and gain his citizenship, and he ended up in Vietnam as a dog handler, of course. But that was a small part of his story that comes out in the story. He went to law school in Louisiana and served in New Orleans as a public district attorney's office and the assistant there, and he had a lot of friends there and kept him, and he was very successful in his career. But he came into a young bag that, he called the kid, that was also a newspaper there. But he had been, he had quite an interesting background himself. He had grown up in Dallas and had been a young man going with his parents to see the new president coming out to visit the city. And that was, of course, JFK. And he had his little brownie with him taking pictures. And he snapped one shot where the guy behind him had then just shot his gun. It was from one of the areas there that was always in concern about being a concern of, where there was a shot being. And anyway, he ended up having to go in his different kind of background. He had to change his path, leave his family and all that, and move about and keep him out of judgment of somebody in the government that was after him. And so the two of them anyway end up in New Orleans in the post of the hurricane, and it starts from there, and they end up, the two of them become the people that learn about their background are under the impression of what they wanted to get to them and get them removed, so they That's where it starts.
For you to write the book and write the dialogue, like, here's some of the dialogue. I love the dialogue because you're so descriptive. You say, the rain slackened and the wind had stopped. The city smelled. Odors of sewage mixed with other foul aromas, and the humidity was high, even for New Orleans. O'Malley's was in the high side of the French Quarter just above the flooding, but the waters were visible a block away as O'Grady walked quickly towards Jackson Square. I can so visualize that, having been there. And even if people listening haven't been there, I think they get the real feel for it. Was it fun or challenging, or what was it like putting this all together, weaving the story together?
Well, it was fun doing it because I had been there in that area, you know, a few times before, and it just really caught on to me about using that city as a grid of it, and it was it really was sort of interesting to use that as the background.
Yeah, I bet. When you so Killing Time, we're speaking with Michael Joseph Mann. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes and Noble. He joins us here on America Tonight. What do you hope people take away from reading your novel?
Well, I just hope they enjoy it, and the way it ends, it sort of ends up with a, I don't know if a good outcome, but more of a satisfaction of a. And I hope that people enjoy it that way.
Will you do a follow-up to this? Will there be another novel?
Well, you know, I've got one under the going up a little bit, and I've started on it. Yep.
So you have a knack for this. You like this. In the off time, this is something that you do.
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love it. Again, the book is called Killing Time. Michael Joseph Mann, thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you know, it's I read that little bit of dialogue, and it really is fascinating. And I have a thing about New Orleans, as many of you know, and I've had the opportunity to be there many times. And I did see the aftermath of Katrina and the rebuilding and what it was like. And so his description of the chaos, the water, the things that happened, and the fact that this Henry O'Grady, Irish Henry, is a former assistant district attorney, and he's right in the middle of all of this. And as you heard from Michael, when he talked about, if you go back and you look at his history, and you look at the fact that of his encounters, including with Martin, the kid, who is known as, who's a writer and a witness to the JFK assassination. Can you imagine what that is like because of the fear he had? And then both of them having their own enemies and things that they had to deal with as a result of what they do for a living. And the Big Easy was just a perfect, perfect place for this, to pull all this intrigue in. And by the way, there's some romance in this, and it's pretty interesting, even the question of the JFK assassination. So we thank him for that conversation, and all of you for listening to this version of the show. Make it count, everybody.
My name is Milan Vukovic. 10 years ago, I got frustrated with the quality of Pau D'Arco tea sold in the stores. So, I founded the Pau D'Arco Tea Club that now ships our super tea to over 100 countries. You too can order or get info about the original pure Pau D'Arco super tea at www.drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113. Why settle for less when you can order original pure Pau D'Arco and drink super tea for only $34.95 per pound plus shipping? Each pound makes 300 cups, which is the equivalent of 12 cents per cup for the original pure Pau D'Arco super tea. Order now at www.drinksupertea.com. That's drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113.